Love music. Live sport. The Lineout with Lewis Stewart on Rock Sport Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Rock Sport Radio. I'm me, Lewis Stewart, with this week's edition of The Lineout, your guide to everything that's going on in Scottish rugby. The weekend saw one win, one defeat for the pro teams. The show has also got reaction to the action in the Tennent Premiership. Also some reaction to the Murrayfield-Hampden decision and a lot more to come up. But first, before I get into any of that, I did promise my first guest that I would get him right at the start so that he can get away, I believe, to help organise the Freshers' Week at St Andrews University. It would appear that if Scott Lawson ever thought that retirement from the playing side of it was going to give him the chance to relax, then he is now finding out how busy life out in the real world can be. He is currently Director of Rugby at St Andrews University and helping to prepare the team for next week's varsity match against Edinburgh University at Murrayfield. Good evening, Scott. It must be quite a busy time for you.
Yeah, good evening, Lewis. Yes, all change, but a challenge that I'm enjoying and slightly different not playing, but one I'm thoroughly enjoying.
The last time I spoke to you, Scott, you were, when you were back in the Scotland squad in the spring, you thought then you were going to play for another year and then retire. So what changed?
I got the, as you come to a career, my career's been pretty long. You start looking at other options and start planning for the future, and then the opportunity of this role at the University of St Andrews came up, and it was just too good a role to turn down at that point. I had the option to keep playing at Newcastle and hopefully sort of push on and remain in the Scotland squad, but a bit of a reality check then, and it was just a really, really good opportunity at a great establishment to continue my involvement in rugby while getting some security for the future.
I've got a little bit of sort of owning up here to do. St Andrews is my old university, so you're on to a winner there as far as I'm concerned. But
hopefully, Lewis, the programme's changed slightly. I think the fresher traditions and everything else that goes on the social side is still the same, but the kind of performance element of the programme is sort of in my domain now, and hopefully we can align the two and really, really enjoy sort of the traditional aspects of rugby while bringing it into the kind of the modern game.
Absolutely, I'm sure that that one of the things you'll be anxious to do is to increase the levels at which the students are playing to something closer to the levels that you're used to as a professional player. Is that something that is going to be easy to do, do you think?
That's probably going to be my biggest challenge, is to just align my sights to what student rugby, the level we're at, and I would set myself a challenge of trying to introduce performance rugby and that kind of high level of, for want of a better word, professionalism to the programme, while still kind of treating them like students and giving them that really good experience of enjoying rugby. So it's a really good balancing act and one I'm looking forward to.
Must be a bit of a problem at this time of year, though, because I'm assuming that there aren't that many students around at the moment. What do you do? Do you have last year's team coming up early or what?
Well, yes, we're very fortunate here. We've got a really committed bunch. They were in on the 20th of August, which is sort of 3 weeks prior to the official kind of Freshers' Week starting. So they've been in training camp for the last 3 weeks, off their own back and working alongside myself, which has been great. And then we've got a Freshers' Week this week, which this Wednesday night starts with a give it a go session, our kind of fresher social down at Madras Rugby Club, as you'll remember well. So we're just trying to recruit for the student year, hopefully some really good first years, but also some really good first team players, but also we're looking for some good sort of third and fourth team social players to come and enjoy the rugby as well.
Which is the key to university rugby, and university, if you don't have that social element to it, then a lot of the players will drop out, but if you do have it, then it can actually push through to push the first team into high things, can't it?
Yes, it certainly can, and it's a really, as I mentioned earlier, tough balance. We're fortunate here ourselves in Edinburgh University, and I think without making a statistic up in the spot, I think it'll be one of the third or fourth highest kind of attended rugby games in Scotland in the calendar year outside your internationals, your professional, your Edinburgh Glasgow derby at Christmas time. I think it's 10 or 12,000 people at Murrayfield and on the 22nd of September is a huge occasion for any student to play in. So it's I just add to that student experience, and it's sort of my job to prepare the team to play as well as they can, and it's their job to go and enjoy it.
Absolutely, that was going to be my next question. A week on Saturday you get to play that game. It is really only rivaled by internationals and the home derby between Edinburgh and Glasgow at Christmas, in terms of capacity, in terms of the audience you get. You know, what sort of shape are you in going into this year's game?
Again, for myself, I'm completely new to the student game, and actually would encourage any kind of professional player or people at the higher level to have a look at it, because it is a really good sort of. There's great depth and number here. There's huge improvement to be made, hopefully, with my coaching and my experience as I kind of pack that on. So I'm relatively kind of, I'd say I'm completely new to it. So I've been delighted at the boys and the girls. We're on four men's teams and we're aiming for two women's teams next year. Their application and their desire to improve, it's really has impressed me in my short time here.
You got to beat Edinburgh?
Again, it's about that student experience, Lewis, but I think from what I've seen so far, I've watched some footage from the last two or three years, it's always going to be a hotly contested contest. Both universities are very, very academic. I think that's the thing that I potentially have kind of got to understand. There's no recruitment as such. There's no kind of selecting people from different environments. The students come here because it's the best university in the country for academia. It's the third best in the country outside Oxford and Cambridge in the United Kingdom. That's why they're here. It's my job to try and put a really good rugby programme in place that can complement those studies and enjoy St Andrews even more.
And in your personal life, it must have been a very busy summer as well. You know, presumably you've moved up to somewhere in the vicinity of the university from down near Newcastle where you were before. That must have been a big upheaval in your life as well, and moving children to new schools and all that sort of stuff.
Yes, it was. It was time to say prioritise my family and go from there. So it was a great opportunity to, if you're moving up, since to myself, you've been in England for the last 10 years, if you're moving to Scotland, if you had to pick somewhere to come and sort of an inverted commas retire to or move to within Scotland, is not a bad to pick as your place of work. So I've got that. So we've managed to get the kids in school, we've managed to buy a house, and the all-important St Andrews postcode gets me my Lynx golf ticket as well, which is very important.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Back in my day, it was a whole £10 a year. I dare say it's gone up a bit since then.
I think it was in line with inflation, but I think it's still not a bad deal for what you get. So if I can take care of the rugby side of things in term and do my work, I'll definitely try and get my handicap down a bit as well.
But you think back to your career, Scott, it was quite a remarkable career for somebody who started off, after all, we discussed before, as a schoolboy playing scrum half, to come through and end out as an international hooker. You must feel proud of that career.
It's something you don't really sort of realise, or you don't look back on at all when you're living it. I was fortunate to have lived it for a long time. But I think it's a bit of a cliche, but I can look back at my career with immense pride. I think what I've achieved within it, with it, for the length of time I did it, was huge. And I was asked the other day what your kind of greatest achievement within rugby would be, and I think it's almost my first and my last cap would be the two things that stick out for me.
You told me through them.
Just to get capped for the first time round. It's anyone that plays professional rugby, plays rugby in general, it's a dream, isn't it? But for me to have a kind of, I think it's a 13-year international career with a 4-year break in between my kind of second last and last cap, it was impressive. I've kind of been out international folding many times and came back in and showed some real resilience just to keep driving myself forward. So I'm proud of that achievement, and to get capped in my last season as a professional was really special.
You came through. I mean, you came through. What about 2006, seven?
you're making me feel. It was 2003. Was my start. 2003. I started at Glasgow with the World Cup. Got an opportunity with the kind of Gordon Bullock being away at the World Cup, and then was captain 2005. So I was there for 4 years. It was really good, and then we decided to head down south, and I've made some sort of really good friends and some really good experiences down there, and to finish up at Newcastle with the season that they had last year, it was just a really good sort of season, career to look back on.
So, I mean, apart from the first two caps, what would you reckon were the other highlights?
I think it's my time at Gloucester. I really, really enjoyed. I think I made some really good friends and Lenny Kingston and that real traditional type of rugby club that Gloucester is. I thoroughly enjoyed that, and that last season at Newcastle. The kind of achievements we picked up last year, I've been on that journey for 5 years. We'd won at Welford Road, we'd won at Franklin's Gardens, I'd played at St James's Park, we'd played in Philadelphia, won at King's Home. Like, things that you don't really, really think you can do within the Premiership, and it was a great season to finish off a club that I'm due a lot to, kind of put that kind of end of my career that I can really look back on and be proud of. So, there's too many moments to mention, but. And the big thing I think is that I really, really, really enjoyed was having my children and see me play for Scotland. I think of an age that they will remember for the rest of their lives. I think a lot of people have babies and sort of toddlers that will see them play for Scotland. But for myself, I've got sort of 9, 10-year-old children that will see them. Yeah, there's my dad playing for Scotland, and that's a great thing to have.
Yes, it'll be a wonderful memory for them as well as for yourself, that they'll be able to, something in years to come. But was it always going to be your ambition after you've retired that you were going to move into coaching, or did you have a view to go back to farming or what?
No, I thoroughly enjoy rugby. Like, I love the game, and I think I wouldn't have done it for so long, and I wouldn't have had the passion and desire for it if I didn't really enjoy it, so... It was always something for me. I wanted to stay in the game, whether it be in the sort of professional game or the club game. I coached at Tynedale for 2 or 3 years, and like I say, I got the opportunity to work with students. And as without going into too much detail, I think I would say the student game for myself and to possibly Edinburgh, it's as semi-professional as any club in Scotland. Let's say we put 4 male teams, 2 women's teams out a week. We've got an S&C programme that gets them to lift 2 or 3 times a week. We've got video analysis, we've got good coaching. It's the Super 6 model, if you want, but applied to students.
And are you doing it all yourself? I mean, that's a huge workload if you are, or are you getting lots of other people coming in to help you with it?
No, again, as that's a role that sits as a director, you've got myself, and I'll be coaching the first team and the second team, and assisting with the ladies, the women's first team. It's a good getting assistant coaches. The university provide full-time S&C staff. We've got a video analysis package as part of sort of Saints Sport. So it really is a well-resourced organisation. And again, it's just to kind of provide a really, really good experience for the students and give them that release from the stresses of studying at what is a very, very prestigious university.
And do you see this being something that you stick with for a decade or more, or is this the beginning of a path into Glasgow or Edinburgh level coaching, do you think?
Again, I say I'm 3 months on the job, and my full focus is being here and doing the best job I can here. But again, you've got to have ambition, you've got to challenge yourself to do things. And to Stephen Stewart, who's my director of sport, he's all about CPD and progression and challenging yourself to be. So at the moment, I think I'll focus all my energy on here. But going forward, there's no reason why I can't develop as a coach and as a person. And you want to coach at your highest level possible. And when you look at all sort of different international and professional coaches around the world, they all take sort of varying paths. I don't know if any have came to a university rugby first, but I'll possibly be the first and see what happens with that.
That's a good path to tread, since you've been treading new paths most of your life. It sounds as good a one as any. I believe you have some freshers to go back to, so I won't hold you any longer.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely stick out. It's about getting the balance, and here's about the experience and education and things. So it's making sure they have a good time, making sure they look after each other. And let's say I've been very, very fortunate. I've had a great career, but I still love rugby, and I'm delighted to be at such a great place and still involved in rugby, and hopefully I can pass on some of my knowledge and experience to what are sort of very intelligent sort of young men and young women.
Scott, that is wonderful. Thank you very much indeed. And for obvious reasons, good luck a week on Saturday. I'm not sure if I'll be at the game myself or not. I hope I will be, but it rather depends on where I'm sent, I'm afraid.
No, definitely. I hope you are, because I think, actually, as I was relatively unknown about the whole experience, and I think I'd, as a sort of general rugby public, to get down to Murrayfield to watch it, it would be a great experience. I think it's really, really good to support the kind of another element of Scottish rugby that might not get as much exposure as some.
Brilliant, Scott. Thank you very much indeed. I will let you get back to your Freshers Week then, and back to the day job again, and hopefully see you a week on Saturday at Murrayfield. Scott Lawson there, thank you very much indeed. As always, former Scotland hooker, now the director of rugby at St Andrews, and looking forward to the Varsity match, as you heard, hugely when it comes up a week on Saturday. Moving on from there, but sort of maybe sideways rather than upwards, we'll go from the university rugby to the Premiership. Get full slate of games at the weekend. Heriot established their playoff credentials when they beat Watsonians 28-24. Melrose thrashed Glasgow Hawks, who I will be watching this weekend in their new home in Balgray. Barrymuir also hammered Hawick. Ayr won the battle of last year's playoff sides by 30 points to 17. Personally, I was at Bridgehaw, where Stirling County won 38-24 against newly promoted Edinburgh Academicals. Afterwards, I spoke to Eddie Pollock, the Stirling coach, and suggested that possibly the difference between this week's win and the week before's defeat at Watsonians had been a degree of patience in the way that they were setting up their attacks. I wondered if he agreed with me.
Watsons, I thought, were good last week as well, and we just were more clinical today than we were last week. But you know, we had opportunities to score and didn't take them with us today. You know, every time we got down the 22, we converted basically, and that was an important thing, coming away with something. You know, and the pressure we built up, we came out with points off it, and I just felt we had two or three line breaks first half that. Instead of just, whereas last week we might have thrown a wee bit of a loose pass, yeah. We actually just played another phase, two phases, and then we scored, you know. So we were actually just more patient, and that was good. I thought, again, we defended well I was disappointed with the last two scores. The game was done by then, but I still was disappointed. Obviously, we leaked tries there, but the set piece was very good. Scrum was excellent, and the line out, was very good as well. So, that was encouraging. It was a lot of positives through the game. I thought Craig Robertson at 15 was excellent. His left foot gave us a different option there as well, and allowed us to exit very well, if you know what I mean, from that point of view. And Gowdy at 10 was very good as well.
Yeah. And I must encourage you that you had so many different ways of playing, various stages. You had the back rows or rampaging from halfway, you had to break out from your own line.
I think the one thing that we've been talking about was the difference from last year was that last year we were a bit one dimensional in that we attacked wide and went, but I think the way we are at the moment, depending on what's happening in the game, we can really do whatever's needed, if you know what I mean, from that point of view. I think we can keep it tight or play open, and that's a good thing, and it's a good thing to have, if you know what I mean. We've got a bit of different harmony, depending on who we're playing against, so we're getting better every week, and that's important. So.
Where do you think this sort of performance, obviously Aki's having come up, are likely to be one of the less strong teams in the league, does this... obviously, you picked up a bonus point in this one, but is this actually, do you think, the challenge to the top?
No, I don't think anybody ever knows anything about the league until you're probably going through six or seven games. I mean, in the next 3 weeks, we've got Ayr, Melrose and Curry, which means out of the top five games, we'll have played four out of last year's top four.
Yeah.
So, if you come out of that with a lot of points, that's a good situation. But we need to see where we are after the end of September, and going into mid-October. And I think after that, teams have played five or six games, you can start to look at where everybody sits, but until then it's difficult to say. I just know the guys are, we're improving, that's all that matters at the moment. Air at Mulberry next week is a different challenge, obviously.
Yeah, very different kind of challenge. Well, that's going to be tougher. But you must be pleased with the way your pack is playing as well.
No, very good. I thought, Adam Nicholl scrummed really well today against Rory Sutherland, obviously. Yeah. And, the young lad Henderson, for his first start, did really well. Hamilton Burr again, obviously, played well. But generally, the pack was very strong. And, it was Grant Hughes, I thought, was very busy, at 12, from that point of view as well. So he's definitely, a guy who will push it under 20 level, I think, this year. Mm-hmm. So he's improving all the time as well. So, it's good. And, we've still got quite a few injuries at the moment, so it's pleasing we've got a pretty competitive squad just now. So that's the big thing.
How coaches and people like that beginning to look at players in terms of next season and Super 6 contracts, do you think?
Well, I think absolutely. I mean, I think the important thing, I think players know that as well. That once you are, there are players who will just want to play club rugby and want to commit to the amount of time that's going to be involved possibly in Super 6. But there's certainly, our guys here are all pretty committed to that. And you can see that they are certainly, we've been training Monday, Tuesday, Thursday for the last 2.5 months. We've been doing an extra night compared to last year, because last year we weren't fit enough. We were leading in most games at 60 and didn't finish well. So we have done a lot more work in the third nights. We've been sitting with 40 guys every night, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. So they're getting, at the moment, they're starting to get the rewards for their hard work.
Eddie Pollock, the Stirling County coach, reflecting on how already we're beginning to see signs of the Super 6 beginning to affect players and their attitude towards things like training and how they're professionalising. And also you'll have picked up possibly naming one or two players who might be of interest to those who are looking at Super 6 contracts next year when that one kicks off. From there, let's head across to the professionals, where the big news of the week was undoubtedly the hamstring injury picked up by Mark Bennett about 20 minutes into Edinburgh's game against Ulster last weekend. Earlier this week, we caught up with Richard Cockerill, the Edinburgh head coach, to find out how bad the injury actually was.
Clearly, it's something quite significant. He's on crutches, so at the moment, we think, we're not to be confirmed that he's ruptured his hamstring at the very top of the hamstring, so similar to the one that Tom Brown had at, last year. So if it has come completely ruptured, then that's going to be a serious injury. It'll be months.
Well, there had been some suggestions in some places that it might have been an illegal clear out that caused the injury. How did Cockerill feel about that?
Yeah, look, Mark's over the ball. One guy tries to clean him and doesn't quite get him, and then he gets cleaned again and he just gets caught with his legs straight and just gets bent into a position where he gets past his flexibility and something has to give, and it was his hamstring. So there's nothing wrong with a clean out. It was just, unfortunately, it's just purely bad luck. Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those. I think it's got nothing to do with his knees. It's just he just got caught over the ball and he's just got caught in a poor position, and unfortunately his knees are fine. Whoever put the grafts in did a good job, because his hamstring broke before his knee did.
The frustrating part being that it came just as he was beginning to reforge that excellent partnership with Matt Scott.
I thought it was starting to develop into a, I thought that's probably the best they've played together. I thought Matt was good last week, but I thought he was outstanding on Friday. Ball carry defensively, very, very good and solid, made some good line breaks. So he's shown some really good form, and I thought Mark was working well off him. Had some good involvements in that first 20 minutes, but obviously, unfortunately, like you say, that's going to be now probably 3 or 4 months till we see that again, yeah.
So who are the likely replacements in Richard Cockerill's eyes?
Well, we've got James Johnson, Chris Dean, has played there and at 12 very well. And obviously Matt Scott's played at 13 a lot, and we've got Juan Pablo Cicino. So there's some good strength in depth there, and that's why we have it. So it's just, you know, I feel very sorry for Mark, because he missed half of last season. And now he's probably got miss a big chunk of this year. But that's just how it is. He'll get himself right, and thankfully it's nothing to do with his knees. And people recover from hamstring issues as severe as this one is. I'm sure he'll be, you know, give him, he'll be hopefully fit by the new year, give or take. We'll see.
There was, however, good news on Henry Pergos, who also went off in that defeat to Ulster. Richard Cockrell again.
Yeah, he's got a minor knee knock. He's fine. He should be fine for the weekend.
Richard Cockrell finishing that off with the good news on Henry Pergos. All that happened, of course, during the team's rather harsh defeat to Ulster last weekend. They won it twice and lost it twice. But at least they have the chance to put all that right in their first home game of this season when they play against Connacht on Friday night. So back to Richard Cockrell again. And was he disappointed with the way that the game in Ulster finished?
We have to learn, you know, that all those things are our own destiny, and we have to keep developing. Nothing's fixed in 14 or 15 months, but I still think we're a better side now than this time last year. I think we're a better side now than the one that finished the season. So, no, teams aren't underestimating us. When teams play us now, Ospreys, full bore with their selection. Ulster, full bore with their selection. You don't normally see that, do you, when they play Edinburgh, because it's an easy target. So, you know, we've got to realise that every time we play, people will put their best team out, knowing that if they don't, they run the risk of getting turned over. So we wanted respect, we've got it. Now we have to deal with making sure we play better, so we deal with the consequences of teams taking us more seriously.
Does that make this week's game against Connacht a must-win?
All those points are going to be important in the mix-up. You know, the 2 points we've got to be important, but the 3 points we left behind in Ulster will be huge. You know, we'll get to a stage where we get to knockouts, and that might be the difference between being third, being in Europe, being in fourth, being second. So all those points are important. So look, we're at home. You know, Connacht are not dissimilar to ourselves in as a club, and we need to make sure that we play really. You know, I'm not going to put pressure on the team to win. It's a must win because I don't think it is. I think what I want us to do is get the same performance out of the team that we got on Friday. If we do that, we'll win. We just can't look at the end result, because I don't think we're a team that can just think about results. We have to make sure we keep playing well and developing that mentality. But the plucky losers bit I don't like, and being the victim I don't like. You know, in the end we got what we deserved on Friday, because you have to control the key moments. And look, they'll be sat there, they've had 2 penalties at the end of 2 games to win the game. They've ridden their luck. Last year we have 7 games that were within a score, we won 6 of them. So you can't, you know, you got to take the rough with the smooth, and that's just how it is. So now I'm happy with where we're sat at the moment from a club point of view. The table's a table, it will look after itself. We've just got to keep playing and performing and making sure we're consistent in our training and consistent when we play, and hopefully we'll get that. As we've discussed ever since I've been here, this side needs to develop. I think we got into new territory on Friday, is that we went to a good team, and instead of going behind and clawing our way back in, we actually played really well and took the lead. And I think we surprised ourselves, and every team's got to have its parts in the game. You knew Ulster were going to come back and have an opportunity at some point, and they did. And we, you know, regardless of, you know, we thought we'd done enough to win it. You catch the kick off, you win the game. The referee makes a different decision. You could easily, you know, it's marginal at best. Then you win the game, but we can control those things. But yeah, we've got to learn to play against good sides, play well, be in the lead, not let them back into the equation. But even when we went behind, and you felt that, you know, those that were there, all of those that watched it on TV, the momentum was well against us. We kept in the game, we eked our way into getting back in the lead, and you know, we could have easily won that game, but I think this is a new experience for us. They've lost there twice in two seasons. One of those is to us. And to be fair, we could have won at the weekend. If the luck had been a bit more on our side, maybe we could have taken the points. But I don't want to rely on luck. We have to make sure that we do things better. So I don't have to rely on an official to make a 50-50 call in our favour.
Catch the kick-off, win the game. As simple as that?
Oh, 100%. It's simple as that. So we can talk about the ref. That, you know, there are parts in the game where we can... We can do things better. You can win the game in the first minute. You don't have to win the game in the last minute. You know, if you do things right in the first minute, you know, just before half time, we played really well. We were right on that goal line. WP now makes a poor decision and drops the ball from a pick and go a couple of metres out, and you lose that opportunity. Look, there's 20 things in the game where you make small errors. One in isolation's fine, but you add 15 to 20 together, and then it becomes a bigger problem. You know, we turned the ball over 13 times, which is 8 less than the week before. So it's an improvement. We gave away 7 penalties, unfortunately, which they kicked them. But 7 penalties in the game is very good. So, I thought the team played very well. I think we've got to still keep a measured view on the expectations of where we're at. We've been to 2 tough places. We've got 2 bonus points, which is better than nothing. I would have been happier for us to win at the weekend, because I actually think we did it. I don't think we deserved to win at Ospreys, even though we had the opportunity. I thought that we played bloody well on Friday, and it's disappointing not to get the points.
Richard Cockerell reflecting on his disappointments, but also the interesting line you'll have picked up in there was that this team has to learn to live with the expectations that it built up for itself last season. Time for a quick ad break, and we'll be back with more rugby after this.
Love music. Live sport. The Lineout with Lewis Stewart on Rock Sport Radio.
Welcome back to this week's edition of The Line Out. Before we were talking to Richard Cockerell about Edinburgh's game at the weekend, but the other event that happened at the weekend, of course, was that Hamish Watson, who missed that game because his wife had a baby girl, and he was off holding her hand, or whatever you do in these circumstances. Open to go door for Jamie Ritchie to play in his stead, and also open the door for a wee bit of role reversal as Jamie Ritchie, who has 2 children of his own, explained.
I know, I think it's the first time he's ever asked me for advice. I mean, a huge congratulations to Hamish on his little girl. I think he'll be a very good father, and I don't know how much advice I can offer him. The best bit of advice I ever got was just try and work it out for yourself.
Presumably you're hoping he gets lots and lots of paternity leave.
I got about 2 hours paternity leave. My first start for Edinburgh was the same day that my son was born, so it's kind of run alongside me, kind of playing more for Edinburgh and kind of gaining that experience. So hopefully we've matured on the field as well as off the field at the same time.
Even so, you must have been delighted it all gave you a chance to play a decent amount of rugby against Ulster.
It was a bit gutted to only get 10 minutes the week before, just due to circumstance. I think good to get a full run out, a full 80, and I thought it went reasonably well, but gutted with the result, obviously.
50th game for Edinburgh at the age of 22. Was he surprised at how quickly it had come around?
Oh, I don't know, this is what, my 5th season now, and I've played once in my first year. So that was 2014, I played against Leinster away. And then 50 games later, it doesn't feel like 50 games. Just they've all flown by, but no, happy to kind of reach that milestone and then hopefully look forward to the next 50. First one was when I was 18, so I guess it's what, 4 years? 50 is pretty normal depending on how you look at it.
So how much has he changed as a player over that time?
I don't know, hopefully I've got a wee bit bigger, I'm not sure how much, but different, I think. It's hard to say. You could look at how I played at school and say that maybe I don't do as much, but it's because you've got better people around you, I guess. But I'll let you guys be the judge of how much I've changed, hopefully for the better.
Cockrell reckons that you need to learn how to win. Is that fair?
Yeah, obviously I think we built a bit of a reputation last year for being a very hard team to beat and got a bit of a hard edge around us, which I think we possibly lacked in the past. When I first started, we were quite happy with being like a hard team to beat, but being on the wrong end of a result. Like, so long as we played well, we're kind of, obviously no one likes to lose, like, regardless of who your coach is. I think we've built, as Cocker's has kind of touched, we've built up a bit of a reputation. We've gained some respect, and now we've got to deal with it. So the club's in a really good place, I think. Happy to be pushing on, and I think this is a big year for us. Obviously, Swansea's a hard place to go. Ravenhill's an extremely hard place to go, as they've, as you know, they've only lost two games there in the last, 2 years. So it's a tough place to go and win. I think by all means we probably should have won on Friday night, even though we didn't. But we've only got ourselves to blame for that. So I think the results don't show like where we were last year. We'd won a game or two. I can't really remember if we'd won two games from two at the start of the season, but were they as hard? Did teams respect us as much? Probably not. So I don't think you can look too much into that, but it's the start of the season. I think we've got a long way to go before we can start making.
Have you noticed any difference in the way people treat you since you got capped in the summer?
I don't know. It's only been two games, really. The kind of
anyway.
Yeah. Hopefully they look at me differently. That they know that I'm of a certain level now, that I've had a bit of experience at that level, and I can kind of cope with the big games. And I've played in a few big games in my career, and I've always enjoyed them. I feel like I kind of hopefully step up to the occasion. So I don't know. You'll have to ask Hawkers that, because I really don't know.
Jamie Ritchie, the Edinburgh flanker there, reflecting on the joys of parenthood and the joys of his burgeoning career in the Edinburgh and over the summer Scotland back row. That's enough Edinburgh. Glasgow are out in South Africa. They're currently in Johannesburg after a not wonderful journey out there, where they will play the Cheetahs this coming weekend, and then they'll stay out there next week to play the Kings in Port Elizabeth. So rather than hear from them, I'm going to do this secondhand and talk to my good friend Kevin Ferry about how he thinks they are going to fare out there, and then we will move on to other topics. First of all, though, Kevin, Glasgow out in Bloemfontein, they won there last season, although it took them until the 79th minute before they actually got their noses in front. Tense game. Expecting something similar this week?
Well, it's a really interesting one, because you would look at the start of the season, if you just looked at on this season alone, and see Glasgow won both matches, Cheetahs lost both matches heavily, Glasgow are a banker to win. And then you look back at last year, where the Cheetahs had lost both matches at this stage, and then got their first home game and promptly ran up a pretty decent-sized score against Zebra, then beat Leinster the following week at home. So they're obviously completely different when you've got to confront them on their home patch. And because of that, Glasgow have got to be pretty wary this weekend. The conditions are quite different. They got that, they have that experience of last year behind them, where you know they were pushed to the absolute limit to keep their winning run going. Or I can't remember actually at what stage of the season that was last year, but the fact is that they took them all the way. So they know that this is not the Cheetahs that were over in Europe. This is a different proposition altogether. I think it'll be tough. I still expect Glasgow to win, and then you know they're playing the team that I've only won one match out of 22, I think, so far in the entire Pro 14 experience. So they could come back from Africa, you know, in a very, very handy position to sort things, you know, to prepare for you.
They had a slightly mixed journey going out that sort of cancelled flights or postponed flights, an unexpected overnight in London, got out there about 15 hours late. Is that likely to affect them, particularly when it comes to adjusting to the altitude, because they're spending the week in Johannesburg, which is a little bit higher, and then going down to Bloemfontein, which is about 500 or 600 feet, I believe, lower?
I've heard so many different theories down the years on the best way to deal with altitude. Personally, I don't think that the flight delay should be any serious sort of a problem for them. Basically, they spent a night sleeping somewhere different than where they expected to. I really don't think that's that big a deal. The time difference isn't a big issue heading out to South Africa. And it was, you know, they did go out nice and early in the week. As I say, the altitude thing, there are those who say that if you don't have the opportunity to spend 2 weeks at altitude getting ready for it, then the best way to deal with it is actually to fly straight in, play, and come back out again. As I say, I heard that theory many years ago. There's no way Glasgow could do that because they've got 2 weeks out there and the second week admittedly at sea level, but there's no way they could have just gone out on Friday and played the game in South Africa. So the preparation's not dissimilar to what it was for the Cheetahs game last year. I don't think it's going to be ruined by that flight delay, that's for sure. They're out there now. They seemed in pretty decent spirits and seemed quite happy about the way things were lining up for the weekend.
Well, I don't know how much we follow these things on Twitter, but I'm glad to report that they did go to a wildlife park and they did meet some lions and nobody tried to stroke a lion and got their hand bitten, which is a good plus point in their favour.
Yeah, well, so at the risk of causing domestic disharmony for you, that makes them a wee bit better than the Welsh. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Yeah, we'll just leave that one there, maybe.
but they've started the season reasonably well, I think, haven't they? Particularly the first half against Munster and some stuffy defence in the second half against Munster. First game against Connacht was a little bit scrappy, but they still came through with a win.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I think any victory in Connacht, you know, can't be underrated or can't be overrated. It's a really, really tough place to go, Galway, and yet Glasgow have made a habit now of going out their first game of the season and picking up a win, and that's a terrific start to the season. Connacht are, for me, a really formidable team on their own patch. At the weekend there, we were billing it as, you know, Glasgow have got to prove against the big teams, the teams with the European preference, that they can go toe-to-toe with them. And in the first half, there was an enormous amount of encouragement to be had from that performance. Now, again, I'm sure that there are those who'll say, typically he's got to be pessimistic about things. But the way things changed in the second half, when Munster brought on some of the people that you would consider to be first-choice players, particularly first-choice forwards, just gives you that little bit of concern that maybe they've not completely addressed all of the issues that we've identified in the past few years, which are holding them back from being able to make the big breakthrough in Europe. Because, frankly, you know, for me, Glasgow have been in the same place for 6 or 7 years. They can look really good against a certain level of opposition, but when it comes to the big teams in Europe, they've just never been able to produce it.
And this is the problem, because we saw, I mean, the likes of Tad Byrne coming on in the second half, he began to make the kind of ground that nobody else on either side was making, ball in hand. You know, you saw those guys who were able to make a difference. You know, if they changed their front row again to a more experienced one, and they bossed the second half. I mean, Glasgow basically spent the second half, I mean, the numbers were something like 85% territory to Glasgow in the first half and something like about 72% territory to Munster in the second half. It was that dramatic a turnaround.
Yeah, and I don't believe that any half-time team talk is responsible for that. You know, I think a change of personnel was really significant in terms of how that turned around. Yeah, Munster were probably a wee bit embarrassed by what had happened in the first half as well, because they just didn't see the ball. But no, That's the ongoing concern, and really it's not going to be answered, quite frankly, until Saracens pitch up at Scotstoun for the first round of Champions Cup matches. All that Glasgow players and their coaches can do is prepare as well as they possibly can and be aware that contrary to what Dave Rennie said at the weekend, and I know that a lot of the time these things are said because they have to be seen to be saying the right things within the camp and whatnot. But when he turns around and says, you know, you guys in the media are giving us a hard time about our forwards. Be assured, they know that their forwards have got to make a step up when it comes to that level. And as I say, there was encouragement first half on Friday night, but just that bit that said, but that was against essentially Munster's twos, and that's the big problem.
Yes, any side that's missing the likes of CJ Standen and Peter Romani and Keith Earls and all the rest of it is bound to be, you know, less effective than the team they actually put out. However, if I could change the subject completely, the SFA's decision to stick with Hampden and reject the SRU's pleas to move to Murrayfield, is that going to have an effect, you think, on rugby at all? Or was this always a side issue from the point of view of the rugby community?
I don't see how it has a significant impact on rugby. It might have been an extra source of income, but to be fair, the finances at Murrayfield seem to be reasonably solid now. They seem to have that side of things pretty well worked out. I don't see it as a particular problem for rugby. I think in terms of the SRU's status, I think they quite like the idea of being the SFA's landlords, but again, it might have changed a few perceptions about things around Scottish sport. But in real terms, day to day wise, no, I don't see it as a problem for rugby whatsoever. I don't think that it's costing anyone too much, and it probably uncomplicates matters further down the line when it comes to use of the stadium. And you know, football would have come in with its fixture cards that needed to be looked after, and that's not going to be a problem now. So no, probably overall in terms of rugby experience, it's probably going to be better for the sport of rugby, actually. So yeah, I don't see it as a problem for rugby at all.
You see down at the Liberty Stadium, for example, where the Ospreys play, they do have to juggle their fixtures around whatever the football guys are doing. They have to leave weekends clear in case a game gets pitched into that weekend, in case they get drawn in things like the FA Cup and things like that. So, I mean, I suppose that would have been the danger from the rugby side of it. And also, money, that you say the SRU finances, and obviously 58 million turnover, they've driven down their debt to as near nil as makes no difference. So they're reasonably healthy, but the way that the English and French are driving up prices and are driving up wages, that extra income would surely be a good thing.
Look, nobody's ever going to turn around and say extra income is a bad thing, Lewis, but as far as I'm concerned, Scottish rugby actually has got to have a serious look at all aspects of that anyway. Are Edinburgh and Glasgow really going to get into the arms race with Toulon, Racing 92, Saracens on their budgets for players? It's not going to happen. Scottish rugby has got to work out, as the Irish have done, how best to make the resources fit the various competitions that they're trying to play in. I think Ireland have shown us how to do that over a number of years. I think we're getting, there are signs that we are moving in the right direction with that. If a player like Finn Russell can be offered hundreds of thousands of pounds by a French club to go and play there, let him go. There's absolutely no point in trying to break the bank at Murrayfield or Scotstoun in order to cover that. These lads should be allowed to go. Stuart Hogg, in all likelihood, will be the next in line for that treatment. Money will be thrown at him over the next year, and I'll be very surprised if he's still at Glasgow. And that's just the reality of it. But the Irish have to deal with that as well. Johnny Sexton was out of the Irish game for a while, came back again, but in between times, were Ireland that badly off because he was away? No, not really. They still had the nucleus of their players at home. The key is that the teams are there to develop players, not necessarily to be there for them their whole careers.
And of course, there's one of the on that, you know, there's a very good argument that a player like Finn Russell will actually develop new parts to his game. He will be forced to develop things like tactical control, which is not a strong point of his game at the moment. He'll be forced to develop in other ways by playing in the French League. But he'll also develop other parts of his game, playing behind that enormous, great big Racing 92 pack, which will deliver him the kind of ball that he can show off with.
I might also get used to Dennis's tilt, as we say in Scotland.
You obviously didn't see the quote from Laurent Labitte, the racing coach, 92 coach this week. He's saying basically, nah, you can't tell him anything. He just does what he wants to do.
I think he'll be able to play that card for a while, that he doesn't understand what they're saying to him. But when it comes down to it, yeah, that's all very well, because he's got off to a flyer, and they will unquestionably indulge that while it's going well. But you know, the French won't be slow telling him if he's not producing in the way that they want him to. And I think, you know, sometimes in Scotland we are a little bit indulgent with our more talented players. I think we've been guilty of that down the years, and maybe sometimes it's quite a good thing to hear a different voice telling them something different. It was really quite entertaining at the launch of Premier Sports a couple of weeks ago, listening to the usually always cheerful and bubbly Doddy Weir talking about how he was looking forward to getting on the telly and delivering a few Jim Telfer-style home truths, because he's a bit fed up of hearing nothing but positive messages. He thinks that sometimes they need to be told things. So, like I say, when they go further afield, that might happen. But I don't think it's a bad thing that you know, what I would say is I just don't want to see Scottish rugby try to compete with that financially, because there's no way it's going to be able to do it.
Particularly after the Hamden decision. Kevin, thank you very much indeed. Hopefully see you soon for a beer.
5 minutes?
It takes a bit longer than that to get out of here. But I'm afraid, as often happens, the clock has beaten us.
Rock Sport Radio, Scotland's only mix of rock and sport.